So Jennifer and I both have a cold and some laryngitis going on in this episode. And on one hand, the timing could not be worse. But then on the other hand, it's the kind of timing that's perfect because for us, it's a reminder as we record this episode that not every day is a day that you feel your best in your body or feel positive about your body. And that's why movements like the body positive movement, which focuses very much on your physical body, have some limitations. Joining us today is Gina Florio, who's a wellness advocate and writer who specializes in health, fitness, and body image topics. Moving from her early struggles with body image as a young girl to a deep dive into yoga and fitness, she's really traveled this wide range of nuances with her relationship with her body and the body positive movement and how it intersects with health narratives in popular culture. Gina formerly worked as a fitness editor, curating content that she later understood was withholding valuable health information to avoid making people, and at times obese people, uncomfortable. But she really questioned this ethically because extreme obesity especially shaves 14 years off a person's average life expectancy, and obesity is now the second leading cause of preventable death in the United States. So her question was, why aren't we talking about it? Why aren't we giving women a chance to make their own choices with all the information available to them about their bodies and fat and obesity and their health? The media, to Gina, was avoiding these difficult truths to promote the feel-good message to just simply love yourself as you are. So after leaving the mainstream media, Gina is now working on sharing her insights through her writing and through her podcast and really encouraging other women to move forward on their health journeys, advocate for themselves, and bridge a gap between truth and compassion in this important health discourse. We hope today's conversation provides you with some alternative and insightful ideas to explore and some new perspectives that will help continue to guide you forward on your wellness journey. Let's dive in.
Are you ready to change your tomorrow and start feeling good again? You're in the right place. Grab your coffee and together, let's start doing wellness differently. I'm Heather Young, a certified personal trainer.
And I'm Jennifer Klutz, a registered dietitian nutritionist. Join us for conversations that will inspire you to ask better questions, remove the overwhelm, and discover what you can do to change your health now.
Welcome to the Critical Conversations Podcast.
Welcome, Gina. We are so excited to have you on the podcast with us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm really happy to be here.
We're very excited to get to chat with you about the topic of body positivity. And I think the best place to start the conversation is where we try to start all conversations with the people we have on the show, which is with the story and your experience with body positivity. So tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, sure. Well, I think like many women in my early 20s, I really struggled a lot with body image, which is very, very common, especially as we're moving into womanhood and moving out of the teenage years. We see so many images around us that start to inform us about the way that our bodies are supposed to look, right? And I was always someone who had, I was very short. And I always look at the cover of magazines and look at these long, tall women with mile-long legs and little cinched in waists. And I always had more of an athletic build, being more into sports and being more active when I was younger. And so moving out of my teenage years, being in college and being exposed to a lot of these images, I started to feel very, very insecure about the way that I looked and almost felt like there was something wrong with me, which, again, is very common with so many women, even if we're beautiful the way that we are and we're fearfully made. But I think so many of us struggle with what we see in the mirror sometimes, especially in younger years. So I became very into fitness and yoga, and I was sort of obsessed for a while with changing the shape of my body and fitting into certain clothes and certain styles. And that sort of evolved on into having an unhealthy relationship with food, of course, getting very much into the binge eating on the weekends and punishing myself with workouts, rewarding myself with food whenever I did something that was deemed good in my mind. And that was a sort of up and down relationship for a long time. And then if I would go through any particularly difficult periods of my life, I would really turn to food as a source of comfort and almost get into this vicious cycle where I would punish myself, eat more, punish myself. And then I just ended up in a period of my life where I had gained about 50 pounds. So I was very overweight because of some unforeseen circumstances that happened in my life. And it was just a really dark time for me. And at the same time, I was writing for a number of women's digital magazines. And I was doing a lot of lifestyle and health and fitness content. And oftentimes we would be assigned what kind of articles to write. And most of these articles at that point were about body positivity and intersectional feminism and a lot of these narratives and stories that I sort of bought into when I told myself that there's nothing wrong with me. What's wrong is the current beauty standards, and what's wrong is the way that we police women's bodies and the way that we judge beauty. So that actually sent me deeper into a spiral of overeating, emotionally eating, telling myself there's no such thing as a right or a wrong food or right or wrong calorie. And I ended up 50 pounds overweight, which on my 5'2 frame is a lot of extra weight. And there was probably a period of 6 to 8 months of my life where I did not take a single picture because I was so ashamed. I felt really embarrassed of the fact that I had let myself go. But even worse than the way that I looked, I felt horrible. I was so unhealthy. It was really difficult for me to do basic things like yoga, which I had been teaching for a number of years. And it was just really hard to get out of bed in the morning and look at myself in the mirror and feel energized. I was tired constantly. I was addicted to junk food. I would eat ice cream for breakfast. I would hide chocolates under my bed. And I would keep going in this cycle of writing all this content for these women's magazines and talking about the beauty of body positivity and fat acceptance. And that really put me in a place where I was lost and very unhealthy and unhappy. So that was the start of my unraveling the movement of body positivity and how in many ways it causes harm to women, even if the movement started with good intentions. I think where we have ended up is actually quite detrimental to many women in today's society. So that was sort of the beginning of my story.
That's quite the story, and it's not uncommon. It is so many women's experience to have been coached from a very young age to be self-conscious about our body or not like our body. I saw one stat that said just looking at a Barbie doll was enough to change a girl's self-reported, you know, body image and body acceptance in tests. So this is something that is coming for you if you are a woman from the day that you're born, and it doesn't lead to good places. So what was that moment though, where you're in this place, you don't feel good, you're not able to do life the way you want to do it, and then you say, you know what, this is not working for me. Do you have a specific aha moment, or did it come on slowly?
Yeah, I think it was, I do remember one moment, and I think from here, it sort of gradually grew. I remember I was in Mexico at the time. I had sort of escaped my life, and I was like, I just need to go live somewhere else and leave the U.S. And I was in my sort of wandering phase, and I was in Mexico. And I just remember ordering a Coca-Cola with breakfast. And I realized that I had been drinking a Coca-Cola every day for the past week. In the morning at like 9 or 10 a.m. in the morning. And there was something that clicked. I was like, I'm pumping my body full of sugar. And I looked down on my plate and there was very little nutrition. And it just something clicked. And I looked down at myself and I was like, I feel really bad when I eat these breakfasts. But there was also a part of me that felt like there was no way I could possibly change it. It was a kind of hopelessness. And then I remember that day going to the beach and not even wanting to get in the water because I felt really sluggish. I felt, again, embarrassed about the way that I looked. And I just did not feel like myself. And then I also realized around that same time that I had not taken a picture of myself in 6 to 8 months. I was avoiding cameras. I would say no to any pictures with friends. And that's when I knew there was something wrong. And that sort of started the aha moment for me. And it also evolved in work. When I started working full time for a digital magazine that has millions of monthly readers, I was a fitness editor, and it became clear to me that the content about health and fitness was being carefully curated and edited based on what would be possibly considered offensive to people struggling with obesity or struggling with their health. For example, I had a colleague who was writing an article about PCOS, and she had interviewed these doctors and medical experts about how to treat PCOS, how you can potentially change parts of your diet and lifestyle to relieve some symptoms of PCOS. And in the article, she wrote a part about how if you are struggling with obesity, losing excess body fat and losing some weight can help relieve symptoms of PCOS. And before she knew it, it was published, and the editorial directors had removed the part about obesity before they published the article. And that to me was extremely upsetting. That was another aha moment for me, because here we are claiming that we are publishing helpful content to women about their health and their lifestyle, and we cannot even be honest and say that obesity exacerbates PCOS symptoms. We cannot even love women enough and be compassionate with women enough to tell the truth and say that the high rates of obesity in the United States are most certainly contributing to chronic issues and chronic diseases that many women are suffering from. And it was in that moment, in my good conscience, I said, I can't work here anymore. So this is crazy. And at the same time, we would constantly be posting articles about women's amazing weight loss progress, before and after photos. Jane lost 100 pounds by doing X, Y, and Z. And we would only share these articles because they got the most traffic. So on one end of the spectrum, we're feeding into women's desires. They want to see success stories. They want to click on these articles and read about women who are losing weight and getting healthy and taking control of their life. And on the other hand, we have our editorial directors who are severely censoring us and editing our content so that we don't offend people who are struggling with obesity. So it was in that moment that I actually became quite furious. I was really mad because I went into this industry. I went into writing and editing, and I went into health and fitness because I wanted to help women heal. I wanted to help them find a sense of peace about their health and about their bodies. And I realized that essentially every single company I had worked for in the past that claimed to empower women, all of these digital magazines, their headline is like, we're here to empower you. We're here to assist you and help you. And what they're doing is the complete opposite. They're lying to women. And so that was a really big wake-up call for me as well.
That's interesting, because it feels like what you were seeing on the inside of the media companies was the same duplicity that is in social media, mm-hmm. which has given such life to the body positivity movement in a good way, because to a degree it needed to happen, because society does need to reconcile that all humans need to be treated with love and compassion and empathy and to be helped towards their best life. That said, the media companies you're describing are cherry-picking the success, the exceptions to the rules, playing into insecurities, and then that's also what we see on social media as well, where you're getting the highlight reel of someone's life and the good days when they love their body.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think social media, like you said, it plays such a big role, and we're seeing a really high number of influencers now who call themselves fat positive. And there are new terms every day that come out on social media, terms like fat liberation. And these terms sound like they would be empowering and sound like they would be compassionate, but they're just terms that are related to a highlight reel of women who they will post their best moments online, which is social media in general. But when you post your best moments online as someone who is struggling with a metabolic disorder, as soon as you turn your camera off and shut down your phones, you have to live with that metabolic disorder. And it's not something to be taken lightly. We now have almost half of Americans who are struggling with obesity. 6 out of every 10 Americans live with a chronic illness. 4 out of every 10 live with 2 or more chronic illnesses. And we've gotten to the point where we have some of the highest rates of obesity in the world, and yet we are the most advanced developed country in the world. And we've also now gotten to the point where social media glorifies obesity and they make it seem fabulous. There's no other illness or disease or metabolic disorder or addiction that we glorify the way that we do obesity. And it is such a disservice to women. Nobody is saying that you have to be cruel. Nobody is saying you have to call people names. Of course, that's not acceptable. But if we want to be truly compassionate, we have to tell the truth. Real compassion is inseparable from the truth. And I think that's what has been so confusing to a lot of people when they hear critics of the body positivity movement talk about the dangers of obesity. They somehow always twist it into shaming. We don't have to shame anybody. There's no such thing as shaming when it comes to just telling the truth in compassion. It's not shaming to say that obesity will very likely ruin your life and ruin your health. There's no shaming in saying that we have the highest rates of obesity we've ever seen in the United States, and that is contributing to a significant decline in quality of life, and it's leading to premature deaths. We've seen a lot of young body positive activists in the last several months, in the last year, who have died prematurely in their 30s or their 40s, and it's become headline news. And there was one TikToker in particular. It was a really haunting video she left on her TikTok in the very last weeks of her life. She said she regretted her eating disorder. She said she regretted not living her life to the fullest. And within a couple of weeks, she had passed away. And we see this as headlines. We see this as news, but these are real human beings. These are people that we should care for and that we should love enough to tell the truth to. And so I think that there is a really big misunderstanding of what it means to be compassionate. We should not include lying with compassion. We need to be telling the truth if we really love people.
So well said. Because social media has led to a really unhelpful lack of nuance within the health conversation. Because when you move to the one side that says, yes, fat shaming is not cool, right? All body shapes and sizes should be accepted and loved and cared for. Then that means suddenly that when you say that, you remove from the conversation real components to taking care of that body that aren't allowed to suddenly be talked about. And within this, I'm starting to see a lot of confusion within even the clients that I work with or people that I see, because suddenly it's almost like a whisper of like, so I kind of want to talk to you about, you know, weight loss, but I know I'm not supposed to lose weight. And my first response to them is, you know, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because this is a space where we're not against saying that we need to have real conversations about what you're thinking about your body. And within the health space, suddenly, you know, we have 100 years of women being told over and over again that health was weight loss. Mm. And that is how we have been taught to think about health, right? Mm-hmm. And suddenly, the way that they have been taught to comprehend the concept of health, and I'm not saying it was right, is suddenly off the table to even whisper about or talk about. Because if you're saying that, then that suddenly means you're put in this extreme category of being fat phobic. Mm-hmm. And so, right, and as women, we're compassionate and loving people. And so you tell us that something is causing harm, we're going to pay attention to it and we're going to try not to do it. But what I see happening is people are being backed into a corner of no longer being able to voice confusion, no longer being able to voice how they know how to talk about taking care of themselves, which is weight loss. And suddenly it's just something you're not even allowed to try and understand and grapple with. Because if you even utter the words, suddenly you're put over in this other camp of saying, oh, so you have a problem with fat people. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that's legitimately not what I mean at all. And I have several health concerns, and how I've been told how to handle these health concerns for years on end of me reading any magazine, reading anything online, right? Even going to health professionals was looking at them and saying, okay, you need to lose weight. And so we're all here for the conversation to change. Like, that's why we started our business, She Changes Everything, which is we want women to have better knowledge. We want women to have better understanding for what is health. How do you take care of yourself? We're just making people more and more confused about how do I talk about this? How do I ask questions about this? Like, where do I even go if I say this wrong or in the wrong order? Suddenly I'm being put into a category that I have no intention of even thinking like this.
Yeah, I think a good way to describe it is we've overcorrected, because I do think that there is definitely something to be said about previous diet culture and how toxic it was. Women feeling like they had to be a size zero, counting calories, undernourishing themselves, undereating to try to fit into this heroin chic 90s supermodel era that was a time where a lot of the supermodels were anorexic and incredibly unhealthy. And I think that we did need to address that, and we did need to change that, because it's not healthy for young girls, especially, to try to fit into that mold, especially if their bodies don't normally naturally look that way. But unfortunately, we've just swung the pendulum way over to the other extreme, where we now cannot even speak honestly about the health issues that are affecting so many Americans. And we can't even speak honestly about a lot of the symptoms of obesity that are causing a decline of quality of life in so many women. And then you get accused of, just like you said, you get accused of being fat phobic, bigoted, insensitive. I can't tell you how many times I've just said something simple about the rates of obesity or about body positivity, and I get flooded with comments of people saying that I hate fat people, which is just so absurd. I mean, my work is with so many women who are struggling with their health, and they want to lose excess body fat and they want to lose excess weight. So not only so they can look better, but mostly because they want to be there for their family. They want to be there for their kids, or they want to prepare their fertility so they can have kids soon. They want to just be more present in their life, and they want to feel their best. And so anyone who dares to challenge the narrative about body positivity and this new idea of fat acceptance, we're suddenly the bad guys. And I truly believe that that is just a tool used to silence us. That's a tool used to get us to stop talking, to hopefully get us to stop bringing up these topics. And when we talk about fat acceptance and body positivity, I don't think it's inseparable from the pharmaceutical industry and the conventional medical system, because I think that if you look at big pharma, they have every single reason for us to be overweight. They want us to be overweight and unhealthy, because then we're lifelong customers. And so I think that there's a lot of different systemic things that are involved in this conversation. And now, even in medical school and a lot of these doctors, I see doctors on TikTok who are getting on camera and they're saying, there is nothing wrong with being obese. There is nothing that you need to change about your health. Just because you're obese doesn't mean that you're unhealthy. And I look at all these doctors and they're all thin. None of them are overweight. They all seem to be at a healthy weight. You know, they seem to be at a healthy body fat percentage, and yet they're the ones getting online and telling people that it's totally okay to be 300 pounds. And it's just a very strange time that we're living in, because we've overcorrected, but in some ways I think that's intentional, because these systems, they want us to be sick and they want us to be lifelong customers.
We're losing nuance within understanding, right? So like, the nuance within this conversation that seems to be getting lost is, despite us making new metrics for Americans to become healthier, every year we don't get healthier. So right now, 1 out of 10 adults get enough fruits and vegetables, and that hasn't changed since I was in school. Like, that hasn't changed. We're sitting at 9-10%, and nothing we're doing is moving that needle, right? So that means, right, we're not adopting this health promoting behavior. 2, exercise. The percentage of people that do the needed amount of exercise that's recommended for, you know, reduced risk of heart disease, reduced risk of diabetes, reduced risk of stroke, like important things that you really don't want to have, right? We're sitting at 24% in America for doing the needed cardio and strength training. Mm-hmm. So again, we're supposed to be focusing on health promoting behaviors, but people are not adopting these health promoting behaviors. And then the worst one is, right, sleep, right? We get the lowest amount of sleep. I think it just keeps getting worse of people not understanding you're supposed to be working towards at least 7 hours of sleep at night. And my average client is averaging, you know, 4.5, 5 hours of sleep, and they don't really understand the issue with that. And so my point is, all we ever hear about is just focus on the health promoting behaviors, just focus on the health promoting behaviors. But clearly there's a disconnect, which is why we want to be having this conversation, because people are not adopting these health promoting behaviors.
It's like your experience where the body positivity movement seems more likely to give people permission to just stay stuck where they are.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to put it, permission to stay stuck where they are. And, you know, those statistics that you're sharing, there's another one I read recently that only 7% of Americans are metabolically healthy. it's so scary.
That could be a typo.
Right. So, and to build on that, right, we're talking about metabolic health, and this is the important nuanced conversation within obesity, right? So the new category is metabolically healthy obese. But within that conversation is, it's a very small percentage of the population. That's the silent part. That's the part that's not being talked about. It's like, yes, you could be within this category where you are metabolically healthy, but there is still a but attached to that. You are still 14% more likely to die of any other cause of death just because you are obese. You're metabolically healthy, but you're, just so you know, we're gonna break the silence here. Your risk of death is still higher. The flip side is, what I find is most people don't even know what metabolic health is. So I look at people and say, you know, we really need to work on your metabolic health. We need to work on your metabolism. We need to work on, you know, shifting these markers that fall under the category of metabolic health, your cholesterol, your blood pressure, within normal limits. And most people, again, while it sounds pretty in print, or it even sounds pretty saying out loud, the average person doesn't know what being metabolically healthy means.
Mm-hmm. Or attaches value to it.
Or holds value. Because again, going back to the foundational confusing point is, we've told women and everyone that when you look at someone, you can determine health. Their size determines the health. And now we're flipping that conversation. And now we're all confused, because now we're supposed to use legitimate metrics for health, which I am all here for, right? Because the other side of the coin is, there are so many unhealthy thin people that have just as high of risk of death, or these health conditions that obese people do. And that's why we want to help clear the confusion of, like, do you know how to take care of yourself? Do you know what body positivity truly means? And are you getting confused by getting put over here in the corner that says, oh, this gives me permission to not take care of myself, to decide I don't need to do these things because of X, Y, Z, instead of understanding what might be being left out of the conversation, because there's a lot of nuance involved in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it just makes me really sad, honestly, to see so much of the confusion.
There are real consequences for right now. The whole system we're sitting in, as far as how food is made, how we're taught about food, what we know about food, it has real consequences. So then when you layer body positivity over it that says, you're beautiful the way you are, you don't have to worry about the way these things are impacting you, then you're doing them this terrible disservice of sitting in this future suffering that's coming down the pipeline, instead of giving them the opportunity to learn more about how food affects their body and the wonderful ways that they can feed themselves that are full of joy and life.
Yes. Yeah. I think there needs to be so much more hope, because this is such an encouraging thing to me. Anyone who is suffering from obesity or, you know, these metabolic disorders, they are reversible. That is good news. We should be sharing that good news. I don't think people realize that it's possible to heal ourselves with our food and our lifestyle. And our culture has become so reliant on pharmaceuticals and medicine and the conventional medical system that we forget that our bodies are amazing. And there's nothing wrong with getting help whenever you need it from the medical system, obviously. But I think that we forget the power of our own bodies. And that's a very hopeful message that I think is much more hopeful and much more inspiring and joyful than what body positivity has turned into. Because what I think what it's turned into is actually quite toxic. I wrote an article for Evie Magazine a couple months ago about how some of the tactics used by the body positivity movement are, it's almost like the sort of manipulation used by an abusive ex-boyfriend. You know, they tell you these lies to just get you to keep doing the same behavior over and over again. And they withhold truths from you and they keep you down. They want you to stay in this pattern of unhealthy behavior. And just when you need the compliment to keep you going, they tell you you're beautiful and they tell you you're perfect. And it's just a very, very toxic industry that it's turned into. And I think that it's so much more hopeful. We should be giving hope to women that you have all the tools that you need to turn your health around, and you deserve to live your best. You deserve to wake up in the morning and feel your best and have energy and be vibrant. And I think that we need to send that message more to women. I get asked the question all the time. People ask me, they're like, how can I influence my friend or my sister or my mom to lose some weight? Because, you know, I really want them to be healthy. I want them to feel better. And, you know, obviously I say it's important to share information. It's good to share studies and research and facts and data and statistics. I said, but the greatest gift that we can give people and the most influential way that we can help people change their lives is that we ourselves live a life that is so great and so vibrant and so loving that people can't help but look at us and think, what do they have that I don't have? I want to be around this person. I want to do whatever it is that they're doing that makes them so joyful and makes them radiate. And I think that's a really good place to start for all of us, is that instead of falling into these toxic narratives of fat liberation and fat acceptance, I think that we need to be showing each other that there are better ways to live, that we have every reason to wake up in the morning and be healthy and be joyful. And then once we display those parts of our lives, I think more and more people will want to join us. And I think that's also what's missing from the conversation a lot of times, is that we just forget that the way that we live our lives is often the biggest influence on other people. It's not only about what we say, it's about how we live.
Agreed. I think that's the biggest struggle, is to not just try to use words, but to use actions. And it's like, I know St. Francis of Assisi, he was like, preach the gospel and when necessary, use words. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful statement. And with body positivity, we do get caught up in the words. And I think right now on the more toxic side, it is more affirmations. And its very shortcoming is the fact that the word body is in the title. And Jennifer and I have found over and over and over and over again that just focusing on your body alone and your body image will always fail you, because we're so much more than a body. Right. And that's part of the reason why you can see that even though it's had this explosive moment on social media, the numbers aren't changing as far as our happiness and our body image and our health markers. None of that's changing. And the way it starts to change is when you step past the body obsession and the constantly checking in on your body, constantly caring about how it matches up with what society thinks, and start seeing it through the lens of more of like wellness and whole person wellness. So mm-hmm. you're looking at your mind, you're looking at your body, you're looking at your soul, and you're not mm-hmm. just stuck on your body. Because if you're having a really bad day with body image, but your soul is at peace, or your mind knows the ways to think through these fallacies you're telling yourself or these, you know, incorrect thoughts, then all of a sudden you have all of these tools that work together to bring you a better day and a better sense of who you are and that sense of wellness.
Yeah, I love that you say this, because just a few days ago, I spoke on my podcast about, there was a viral conversation about therapy, and people were discussing whether therapy is useful, whether the industry of psychiatry is useful. And one point I brought up is that we cannot compartmentalize our health. And I think one of the downsides that people fall for today when it comes to therapy, for example, this is certainly not all therapists and practitioners, but I think some just focus exclusively on mental health. And mental health is important. But what kind of makes me curious is I see a lot of these mental health campaigns. They're always talked about exclusively in the context of therapy and, you know, self-care, but none of it ever relates to our physical health. Like, one of the reasons why so many people struggle with depression and anxiety is because they are physically unwell. They have poor gut health. They're not metabolically healthy. They're not physically active. So, of course, our mind is part of our body. We can't separate what's going on physically with what's going on mentally. And then I also think what our spiritual health is just as important. And so we can't separate these categories of health and expect our whole body, our holistic self, to be healed. We really have to understand that all three, the physical, mental, and spiritual, they're all connected and they're not inseparable and they rely on each other. And so just like you said, some days you might be having a bad day physically. You don't feel so good. You're not feeling your best. And even mentally, you don't feel good. But if you have a peace in your soul, if you have that comfort and peace that gives you wisdom, and you know that this is just today. We're just going to get through today, and tomorrow might be better, but I'm just going to take it one moment at a time. That's very reassuring. You can find some kind of respite there, and you don't have to worry so much about getting everything right physically and mentally. But it's so missing from our society today. We're not encouraged to think about it that way. And that's why I have a friend, he's a frequency medicine doctor. He always talks about this sort of triad of health that holistic health practitioners use. And they focus a lot on emotional health. You know, mm-hmm. He sees a lot of patients who come in and they're struggling with chronic illness, Hashimoto's, thyroid issues, they can't sleep. And a lot of the times they need to have some sort of breakthrough emotionally. And that's just not talked about enough. You know, people go to the doctor and they're just given medication. They're not really asked any questions about, you know, their sleep or their lifestyle, let alone their emotional state. And so it's no wonder a lot of people are left without the help and the healing that they need, because we're not looking at the entire system. We're not looking at the whole body.
Exactly. The holistic side of wellness can't be left out. Like, you can't separate each part of us into different silos and expect to be well. In order to heal, or in order to take care of your body, no matter if you have a chronic illness or not, no matter if you have a disability or not, it involves taking care of your whole self, not just the body part, or not just the mind part, and not just the soul part. They're all interconnected. And I think one of the best ways that science has actually found that this is true, besides what God says about it, is they know that our heart dictates and talks to our brain. So the heart is the seat of our emotions. And oftentimes within the mental health conversation, we're just talking about the brain. We're just talking about how the brain works and how the mind works, right? But we know that the brain and the heart talk to each other, and that the heart emotions actually communicate to our neurotransmitters in our brain. It actually tells us how to feel. It tells us they work interchangeably. They work together. And one of the most fascinating ways, besides, you know, the scans that show this, is they're starting to find that in people who get heart transplants, they put that heart in that person, and then the person with the new person's heart, they start to experience previous memories and events from the person who previously was the owner of that heart. Oh my goodness. And they start having emotions they've never had before. It changes. They can change their personality. Like, so if someone gets a heart with someone who is dealing with anger, they're starting to show that suddenly this person becomes more angry, right? And we can't really know that. That's not part of the how we decide if someone gets a heart, but this is a byproduct of more and more transplants happening and more people being like, okay, I need to know if this is supposed to be happening to my body because this is what I'm experiencing. And when someone can know, guess what? We don't separate these because they talk. Like, we know they talk. They matter. Like, your feelings and your emotions not only talk to the, like, your whole body, but they talk to your brain. And your brain talks to your heart. And we know this to be true. It's not just something that's said by really, you know, smart people, but also not just something that's said in the Bible. It's literally true.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, it's the little things like this where I realize that there will probably never be enough science to fully explain the way that God has made our bodies, you know, and especially talking about things like fertility and pregnancy. There's a lot that we do know, but there's a lot of these connections that we have with our babies in the womb and the nutrition that we give to our children and the nutrition that they take from us. Like, there's so many of these connections and physiological connections that we'll never really understand. And when you learn little things like this, you really get a little glimpse of how carefully God made our bodies.
And there's a sense of awe too.
Yes.
Which I think is important in kind of summarizing the whole conversation. When you're having a conversation about our bodies from this place of humility that says there's so much we don't know about the body, there's so much we don't know about the details of its inner workings. And so we want to have more open-minded, constructive conversations that allow for the uniqueness of all of our experiences. Then all of a sudden you're not stuffing people in boxes and telling them they have to think a certain way. They can only change their body a certain way, or they cannot change their body. And it becomes a much more empowering place full of awe and hope and amazement.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's another thing that's sort of related. It reminds me of is that the longest study ever run, it's still running, this Harvard study that I think that's going on almost 90 years. It's found that the most important factor for longevity and health is not related to diet or exercise. It's your personal relationships.
Mm.
And the hypothesis is that the more warmth and love you have with people in your life who are close to you, the more it reduces stress and it reduces inflammation, and it can actually ward off a lot of chronic diseases and illnesses. So even if you don't have the best diet, all of the warmth and love in your life can bring you a lot of physical health. And it also, you know, and that's why I think a lot of people are struggling so much with health, is because our society is so isolated. We've never been so lonely. We've never been so disconnected. Even before the pandemic, people live chronically online, and I think there's also a big part of it is a decline of religious life, a decline of church life that has left a lot of people, a lot of women feeling lonely and like they don't have anyone that they can really go to and turn to. And then even reminded me of that movie, The Whale. I saw it recently with Brendan Fraser, and it was so sad, but it was so good. And here's this man, he weighs like, what, 500 pounds. And the reason that he fell into this deep depression is because his personal life was in shambles. He lost somebody that he loved deeply. He was divorced and had no relationship with his own daughter. And he ate himself to death. And this is a man who was a complete recluse and had hardly anybody in his life. And so you see these connections of how our relationships, they bring us not only joy, but they bring us health. And we need to be putting more emphasis on that as well. I think we need each other. People need to admit that we need one another.
Absolutely. When someone is speaking hope and truth and life into you, that is an intangible that cannot be measured. I think the greatest example of this is the studies that they do where when you talk to water, right, you say nice words, you say loving words, you say kind words, how beautiful the water looks, right? So when they put it under a microscope, the structure of water legitimately changes, and it makes these beautiful works of art. And then when you speak, you know, unkind words, mean words, harmful words to water, and you put it underneath a microscope, it looks sad. It looks scary. It's not beautiful works of art. And the human body is 60% water. So if you just take that on some level, and you know that we already know that water can be spoken to and it changes the structure of it, you can just use that simple example and know that God put water in our body. We are 60% water. And I 1,000% believe that is part of why words hold so much power. Yeah, power because of what it can do emotionally, right? And mentally. But I think there's an intangible that we do not comprehend for how words heal the body on levels that we haven't even figured out yet.
Mm, that's so true. Yeah, I think there's so much left to learn. I think we have to really be in awe of the way that our bodies are made and really respect and love our bodies at the end of the day. And I, like I said earlier, there are some things that the early body positivity movement got right, which is that we should love and appreciate our bodies. Should. That's a good place to start. It doesn't mean that you're not going to change anything, you're not going to improve anything, but we do need to love our bodies and we need to have respect for this temple that we've been given so we can take the best care of it.
So well said. It does feel like we could talk to you forever because there's so many similarities between how you value health and how you champion women and want the best for people. But for today, I just want to wrap up on the question we always wrap up from all of our guests, which is, what is the one piece of information that you would give our listeners and women where you feel like it would change everything for them?
That's such a great question. The one piece of advice I would give, it's a bit general, but I would say it doesn't have to be that hard. You don't have to go so hard when it comes to your health. I think that a lot of women overstress and they overperform when it comes to both diet and exercise. And I think it causes more stress, more cortisol in the body, and that can be harmful to our hormones as well. I think a lot of women would be a little bit better off if we just realize that it does not have to be that difficult. You know, we can just kind of sit in that and trust that these little changes that we make every day and the little choices that we make every day are going to add up, and we just have to be patient, but it doesn't have to be that hard.
Absolutely love that. Could not have said it better. And as we always say to our clients, small changes make big differences. Mm-hmm. And you really cannot undervalue what small, consistent actions are doing for taking care of you.
That's so true. Thank you both so much for having me. I really appreciate the work that you do. I hope we can meet in person one day.
I agree.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. If you're ever in the Middle Tennessee area, please let me know. We'll meet up.
Okay. Sounds good.
We would love that. Thank you so, so much for everything that you shared and giving your time and your energy and just allowing us to start exploring a really difficult topic that has a lot of nuance in it. But coming from such a really loving and caring place, it was such an enjoyable conversation. So thank you.